This shiur is on Likutei Sichos, Chelek Yud Ches, Parshas Baha'aloscha, the second sicha. From the outset, I'm going to tell you that this sicha is a long one, and it's a detail-filled one. It's, like every sicha, it's amazing. Let's jump into it. The Rebbe says like this. This week in the Parsha Baal Eischa, we talk about the fact that the Bnei Yisrael brought the Korban Pesach in the desert after they left Egypt. So, this says the Rebbe, from the differences between the Korban Pesach that the Jews brought in Egypt and the Korban Pesach that the Jews brought a year after they exited Egypt when they were in the desert, about which it's told in our Parsha Baal Eischa, and the words used are that the Bnei Yisrael made the Pesach b'moyadoi in its proper time, on the 14th day, etc. Says the Rebbe, there are two aspects that we want to look at. First of all, the Pesach that they brought in Egypt, this was a few days before they exited Egypt, they brought it on a weekday. Because we know that the way that the week, the calendar, fit into the week then was on the 5th of Shabbos. In other words, on the 5th day of the week, on Thursday, the Bnei Yisrael went out of Egypt. That means Thursday was the 15th day of Nisan. Which means that the 14th day of Nisan, which is the day of the bringing up of this Korban Pesach, is one day earlier. That's on a Wednesday. However, this second Korban Pesach that was brought, the one they brought in the desert, spoken about in our Parsha Baal Eischa, was brought on Shabbos. How do we know? Because the book called Seder Olam, this is a Mishnaic account of the order of the world. In other words, the history that took place. It says that on Rish Chodesh, that time period. That says that Rish Chodesh Nisan, the first day of Nisan of that year, was the first day of the week. First day of the days of creation. So if Rish Chodesh Nisan, first of Nisan, is a Sunday, that means that 14th of Nisan, close to 2 weeks later, is going to be on a Shabbos. So we understand that the first year the Pesach was brought, before Exodus, they brought it on a Wednesday, 14th day of Nisan. Second time it was brought was after, it was the second year in the desert, it was brought on a Shabbos. Number two, by Pesach in Egypt, the main emphasis was on the individual. Every individual household had to, first of all, do all of the services of the carbon of the sacrifice in a personal way. Didn't come to a communal shul or house of worship. Also, in their very home, it says that they had to take from the blood and put it on the two doorposts, which was not the case in the Pesach that they offered in the desert the second year. All the Jews had to bring the carbon in the Mishkan. There was already a common place. There was a sanctuary. And all the Jews had to come bring the carbon Pesach there. That combined, that joined together, essentially, the sacrifices of all the Jews, as the Chazal tell us, as the Lashon we find in the Gemara, that Korban Pesach is a kind of sacrifice that comes biknufia. It comes with a gathering of people that have gathered together to come for Yom Tov to the central place, Yerushalayim, in the desert. It was at the Mishkan. And therefore, it is also called a Korban, not an individualistic Korban, a Korban Yachid, but a Korban Tzibur, a communal Korban. That's what the Rebbe establishes here in the first Eis base. We can say, says the Rebbe, from here we learn out, also in regard to the Korban Pesach of post-Matan Torah, in other words, the issue is that when the Jews were still in Egypt, it was before the giving of the Torah. But nonetheless, we can learn out two different sets of halachas that apply to the Korban Pesach in the post-Matan Torah Korban Pesach. In other words, in our regular mitzvah of Korban Pesach. What is that? The fact that Korban Pesach pushes off Shabbos. Why does it push off Shabbos? We know that an individual voluntary Korban doesn't push off Shabbos. You can't decide to bring a Korban of Thanksgiving, for example, on Shabbos. Come back on Sunday and do it. Because the bringing of Korbanos involves things that are not permissible on Shabbos. Slaughtering the Korban, burning the Korban. So when it's something that's a Korban Tzibur, communal Korbanos, we know we bring them on Shabbos. Yet the Korban Pesach is a private Korban, yet we bring it on Shabbos. So that aspect that we said all the Jews came together to bring the Korban Pesach. Their individual Korban Pesachs, they brought together in one general place. So from the fact that they brought it together, that there's an aspect of communal Korban Pesach, from this we know, you bring it on Shabbos. As the Gemara says in Pesachim, a fascinating story that one time, the 14th day of Pesach fell on Shabbos, and they forgot, and they didn't remember. Does the Korban Pesach push away Shabbos or not? In other words, that meant, just like it was this year, in Tovshin Pei Aleph, that the first Seder was Matzah Shabbos, so that means the 14th of Nisan is Friday. It is Shabbos. Do you bring Korban Pesach or not? They forgot. As we know that those that were in the leadership of the Bnei Yisrael, the Bnei B'Seder, they forgot. So Hillel came and he said, look, let's think about this. Is there only one instance of a Korban Pesach or something like Pesach that we're supposed to talk about pushing off Shabbos? We have more than 200 Pesachs, in other words, sacrifices, every year that push away Shabbos. What was he referring to? He didn't mean you have 200 Korban Pesachs, you have one Korban Pesach every year. He meant we have 200 communal karbanas. That's the daily karbanas that you bring to one in the morning, one in the afternoon, every day. And you have the musaf of Shabbos, the extra karban of Shabbos. So we have, if you have 50 Shabboses, right? You have two karban tamids, two of the morning and afternoon, and you have the musaf. You have more than four karbanas every Shabbos. You have the musaf is more than one animal, and V'yoyim HaShabbos, we say in the Musaf, V'yoyim HaShabbos, Shnei Chvasim and Eishan HaTmimim, was two Chvasim, was two lambs. So you have the lamb of the morning sacrifice, the lamb of the afternoon sacrifice, you had the Musaf in between the two lambs. So you had four Karbanas every Shabbos you're bringing up. What's your question about the Korban Pesach? So, and the Gemara does indeed learn a Gzeira Shavah, it says, since it says the word Moyadoi, you have to bring the Korban Pesach in its time, and it says that you have to bring the daily sacrifice in its time. Just like we know that the daily sacrifice that you have to bring in its time needs to be every single day, even on Shabbos. Similarly, when it says you have to bring the Korban Pesach in its proper time, we know it has to be even on Shabbos. In other words, that's the aspect. What's the basis for bringing it on Shabbos? Basis is because it has a communal aspect to it, and the communal karmanas push off Shabbos. More than that, the Yerushalmi says explicitly that Hillel actually said, the version of this story in the Yerushalmi, Hillel says, since the Korban Tamid, the daily sacrifice, is a communal Korban, and the Korban Pesach is a communal Korban, just like the daily sacrifice is a communal Korban and pushes off Shabbos. Similarly, the Pesach, which is a communal Korban, pushes off Shabbos. Rebbe places here in square brackets. It's no question that the Gemara says something else. The Gemara says, take this rule in your hands. Anything that has a fixed time pushes off Shabbos, even if it's private. And that's what the Rambam says too. If it's the Torah has given it a fixed time, so then it's got to push off Shabbos. The Torah knew about Shabbos, and Hashem said, bring it in its fixed time, even on Shabbos. So that's no question to what we're saying now here, that it's got to do with the fact that the Korban Pesach is a communal Korban, not only because it's a Korban that's fixed to a particular time. Because that opinion that says that if it's a fixed time, you bring it even on Shabbos, that's Rabbi Meir. And that's not the first opinion in the Mishnah. The first opinion in the Mishnah says that it's nothing to do with whether or not it's got a fixed time. It's got to do with whether it's communal or not. Why do the daily sacrifices push off Shabbos? Because they're communal karbanas. And from the fact that the B'nai B'Seira, the children of the Nasi, B'Seira, and the Hillel, and also, as we're going to see later, this is the Machlekes of Rabbi Yosha and Rabbi Yenisa, the fact that they can even have a discussion about whether Korban Pesach pushes off Shabbos means that they do not hold like Reb Meir that any time-bound Korban is going to push off Shabbos. Otherwise, what's the argument? It means they hold like the Tana Kama. Tana Kama says that not necessarily does every time-bound Korban push off Shabbos. What do they hold? That if it's a communal Korban, then it definitely does. We still need, though, to, even if we're saying that it's a communal Korban, that's why that's a communal Korban push off Shabbos, we also need that other caveat that it's also something that's hinged to a particular time. Because otherwise, even if it's a communal Korban, we have other Korbanas, for example, if the entire community makes a mistake and then there's a sacrifice brought on behalf of the whole community, so it's a communal Korban, you have no greater community than the entire community, but you're not going to bring it on Shabbos because it doesn't have to be brought on that day particularly. So the real main reason why you bring the Korban Pesach on Shabbos is because there's an aspect of community Korban. And it's a fixed time. So therefore, end of square brackets, therefore says the Rebbe, from the fact that Pesach in Egypt, the Korban Pesach was distinctly a private carbon. It was offered up in the days of the week. That's why it fell out on Wednesday. It couldn't have fallen out on Shabbos. You wouldn't have been able to bring it on Shabbos. So from this, we understand that a private carbon, and that's what the flavor of the carbon Pesach in Egypt was, a private carbon, each household to its own. It wouldn't have pushed off Shabbos. We understand from this, it doesn't push off Shabbos. Whereas the Pesach in the Midbar, the Pesach that the Jews brought in the desert, which was on Shabbos, that's because in that carbon Pesach, we saw that it was a communal carbon. They all came together to the Mishkan to bring it. And that's why it can push off Shabbos. So in other words, we see in these two carbonous Pesach, we see the two aspects of how we view the carbon Pesach. Gimel says that. Even though that in the Pesach that they offered in the desert, and similarly the Pesach we continue to offer for all generations, it had a certain classification of being a communal carbon. However, it's not in its entirety a communal carbon. On the contrary, in its essence, it's actually a private carbon. Because even in the post Exodus carbon Pesach, every group had to bring a separate carbon Pesach from their own money. It wasn't brought from the communal coffers, and had to be eaten by the owners. We know that the halacha is the carbon Pesach is brought to be eaten, and it can only be eaten by those who have been appointed on this carbon. You had to join a group, contribute money, and you were part of the carbon, right? And many other things that we see, that it's definitely a private carbon. It's not a public carbon. Now, it's just that we're saying it also has some of the qualities of being a communal carbon, because it comes, all the Jews together come to the Beis HaMikdash to bring it, and it also becomes offered in three groups. Interesting, the Torah says that the V'shachatu Oisei Kol Kahal Adas Yisrael Ben Arbaim, that it says three times the word that the community brings it up. From this we learn that Kahal Adas Yisrael, Kahal Adas, Kahal is the community, Adas, the community, Yisrael, the Yisrael, we learn that there's a concept of bringing it up in three groups of communities. So what we do is we bring it three groups, and each of those groups should have also 30 people. So each group has Kahal Adas Yisrael, and we have three groups of 30 for Kahal Adas Yisrael. In other words, Korban Pesach has both aspects. There's aspects of it being a private carbon, and there's aspects of it being a public carbon. And we could say even more than this, says Levin. He includes it, they're included, the aspect of private and communal are not two separate things. In the very aspect of the Pesach that it is a private carbon, there's also communal aspects, gedonim, to it. Same thing on the reverse. In the very fact when we say it's a carbon, it's a public carbon, there's also the aspect that it's actually a private carbon at the same time. It's a carbon that has both elements to it. As we said, the carbon Pesach is brought at the expense of the individual. It also comes in the beginning only to be eaten. It can only be eaten by those who are appointed on it. So therefore, each group needs their own separate carbon. However, that separate carbon has to be brought in a togetherness. So in other words, even in the separateness, there's a common aspect that has to be brought together. On the other hand, when you brought the carbon together with those three groups, it wasn't brought like one separate group, it was brought in three groups. In other words, even when you have the communal aspect, there's still a division into individuality, into three groups. Right? So it's not fully, it's kind of a mix, communal and private. According to this, we can also understand, says Rebbe Dalet, this is the discussion between the B'nai B'Seira and Hillel about whether Karban Pesach pushes off Shabbos or not. What is the basis of their argument? So, yeah, okay, they forgot. But what is the basis of their argument? What are they thinking? The question here is what they're thinking, what they're debating is, since Karban Pesach has both aspects, it has an aspect which it's a private carbon, it has an aspect which it's a communal carbon, so therefore you could think, which of them is the more important one? Which of them is more prominent? Which is pushing off the other ones? Is it the private aspect? And if it's the private aspect of the carbon which is more important, then it's not going to be push off Shabbos. Or is it the communal aspect of the carbon? Well, if it's the communal aspect of the carbon, then it has the power to push off Shabbos. An additional proof to this way of thinking that we're that there's two aspects in the Korban Pesach, and that's the dilemma here. We find in this what the Sifri brings on the pasuk that the Bnei Yisrael brought did the Korban Pesach in its proper time, and it's brought there a machlekes between Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonason. Rabbi Yoshia says, the pasuk says it has to be brought in its time, the Korban Pesach has to be brought b'moyado in its proper time, that means it's going to push off Shabbos, like Hillel. Rabbi Yonason says, no, I still haven't learned from this word b'moyado, it has to be its proper time. He doesn't tell me that you have to, that it pushes off Shabbos, sorry. He holds like the B'nai B'seira, no, doesn't push off Shabbos. And since this point, we just explained, the point is really, which one is more prominent? That we, whatever way you look at it, there's aspects of communal, there's aspects of personal, of individual karma. Which is the one that kind of takes over? Which is the one that colors the entire karma? Are we going to treat it as a communal, bring it on Shabbos, or as a private, not bring it on Shabbos? In other words, look a little deeper. When we have a group of people, do we look at them? Well, they each have their individuality. Or do we look at them? No, but they've become a new entity. They've become a group, a community. So this is an interesting thing. We see individual things that have come together. Is their individuality more pronounced to us? Or is their commonality, their community more pronounced to us? And says the Rebbe, that this is... we find in several places, and I was going to bring seven additional places, where we find a point of argument between the two very people, Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonason, about the same, that we can learn that their argument is in the same vein. They're arguing intellectually. When there's something that can be joined, do we look at it as a joined new entity, or do we still look at it as unjoined and individualistic points that each stand on their own? Are you ready? Okay, let's jump into it. I need a good l'chaim before jumping into this, because again, as I said, there's seven examples in various sugyas in Shas, various topics throughout the Gemara, throughout the whole Gemara. We're going to see it, the machlekes. Okay. The first thing the Rebbe says, we see a machlekes in Rabbi Yonason and Rabbi Yoshia about people. Do people get joined or do they remain their individuality? What's the machlekes? Ba'ir anidachas, there's a concept of a city where the entire city has served idolatry. So they are no longer judged as individuals who are idolatrous. They're judged as an idolatrous city, and everything and everyone in the city, if the majority of the city has sinned, everyone in the city gets pulled in and has to face the penalty, capital punishment that a Ir HaNidachas, a wayward city, a pushed away city, an idolatrous city faces. How many people constitutes a city? So here's a machlekes. How many people is a Ir HaNidachas, a city of Nidachas? Because there has to be very clear clarification, qualifications to fit this particular halacha of Ir HaNidachas. Rabbi Yoshia says it's from 10 people until 100 people. Rabbi Yonason says the criteria to be a city that's a wayward, an idolatrous city, and be dealt with the halachas of Ir HaNidachas, it's from 100 till the majority of the tribe. In other words, if there's more than 100, but it didn't yet reach the majority of the particular tribe, the Jews lived in different tribes. So let's say the tribe of Shimon had a city that, God forbid, the tribe had a city that was idolatrous. If there were more than 100 people, says Rabbi Yonason, up until you reach the number that constitutes the majority of the entire tribe, that city could be considered Ir HaNidachas. Says Rashi, what's Rashi explain? What's the reason of Rabbi Yoshia that he says less than 10, from 10 to 100, it can be called the Ir HaNidachas? He says less than 10 isn't a city. More than 100, it's no longer a city, it becomes a tzibur, it becomes a community. In other words, Rabbi Yoshia holds that more than 100, it's already not a city of individuals. It becomes a new entity of a community, and it's no longer Ir. Apparently, Rabbi Yoshia holds that Ir is a congregation of individuals living in a city. Once you're more than 100, it's like the way I'm understanding, which, by the way, may not be right. It's more than 100, it's like an entity of a clump. so to speak, a new entity. We don't even see the individuals there. It's not going to be considered an ear, a city. Rabbi Yonason, on the other hand, holds more than 100. Oh, that's when it becomes a city. That's when it becomes a group of individuals. I still see the individuals there. They haven't lost their identity. Until the majority of the tribe. If it's the majority of the tribe, now I no longer see individuals. I just see a new entity of a huge mass, like a one-time mass. In other words, again, what we're saying is, let's go back and understand. Rabbi Yoshi is saying that when I see individuals joined together, I'm going to be very quick to say that the communal aspect is what colors the whole group. So even if there's 10, more than 10 becomes already, more than 100, that's it. I can't look at them as individuals that are living in a city. It now becomes a whole new entity called a tzibur. Rabbi Yonason says, no, we always try and look at individuality for as long as we can. So therefore, until it's the majority of the tribe, we're still going to see this as a group, as a city of individuals, still called the ear. Aye, what about from 10 to 100? Rabbi Yonason says that's not a city, because he sees even more. He sees them as literally individuals. They're not even a city. They're literally individuals. From 100 till the majority of the tribe, they can be called an ear, they can be called a group of yichidim. More than that is tzibur. Rabbi Yoshi says no. Right away, as soon as they become 100, when they become more than 10, we already see them as a group. Stage A group is ear. Once they become more than 100, we see them as a new entity called tzibur. Because again, we're always looking to join the individuals and merge them as one. That's Rabbi Yoshi's shita. So again, Rabbi Yoshi said we're looking at the communal aspect of the carbon. That's why he says bring it on Shabbos. Rabbi Yonason says, no, we look at the individualism. Don't bring it on Shabbos. So we saw it also by Yirani Dacha. Second example that Rebbe brings is with regard to, God forbid, cursing a father and mother. So the Pasuk says, a man who curses his father and his mother, says the Gemara, we only see from this that if a person cursed both his mother and his father at the same time, that that's when he's liable to the death penalty. What happens if he cursed his father and not his mother, or his mother and not his father? How do we know it's also a capital offense? So the Pasuk says, his father and his mother he cursed, he's liable for his own life. He's, in other words, he's liable for death. So from here we see that the first, beginning part of the Pasuk says, Ish ashe yikalos aviv. First it says a man who will curse his father. At the end of the Pasuk it says, the word kila, the word curse, closer to mother. His father and his mother he has cursed, he's liable for death. So we have that extra pasuk. It puts the word curse next to mother, and first time it was next to father. So we see each one individually. That's what Rabbi Yonasan says. Rabbi Yonasan says, no, it seems to be both like one. No, in other words, this pasuk, I don't need something to teach me, says Rabbi Yonasan, that I would think maybe two of them together, only that's when you're liable. No. The pasuk could be read either way. You could read the pasuk that you're liable if you do to both together only, or each one on its own. And I'm going to read it simply that it's even each one on its own until the Pasuk says together. In other words, the Pasuk wanted to tell us that a person is only liable for cursing father or mother if he does it both of them together. It would have said a person who's makalal aviv ima curses father and mother together is liable. The Pasuk doesn't say that, and we can read it as individual. No, so what do we see here? Rabbi Yoshi says, you see this, when you see these two details, mother, father, you look at them as one entity, a mother-father entity. In other words, these are the two people that came together to give birth to the child. And therefore, if the pasuk, it wouldn't be an extra pasuk to say that even, that you are liable if you even just cursed each one individually, I would say you're only liable if you curse them both together. That would be my gut reaction. That would be my simple reading of the pasuk. Why? Because I see the two individuals, the mother and father, but I quickly look at them as one entity, those that gave birth to this child. The Bienesis says no. Even if there wouldn't be a special pasuk to tell us that that each one cursed individually is also chayiv, I would anyway look at them as individuals. I wouldn't join them together. I would say the pasuk says father, mother, and they're separate. If the pasuk wanted to join them together, the pasuk would have made a special point of saying you're not allowed to curse your mother and father together. And by the way, there's a pasuk that says don't plow with a shoyer and a chamor, with a donkey and an ox together, yachtov. If it wouldn't say yachtov, right? It says Yatav means we can't do it together. But each one individually I can do. So if the Pasuk knows how to tell us not to do something, and it's only when it's together. So the fact the Pasuk doesn't say anything about together, and it said, Aviv Imay, I always maintain, says Rabbi Yonasan, you maintain the individuality of things. What's more important than what colors this group of mother and father more is their individualism. Mother separate, father separate. So I don't need a special teaching in the Torah that you're liable if you curse your father and or your mother. God forbid, of course. The third example of this different way of looking to Rabbi Yeshem Yonison is Pesach. In Kachim, in the holy items, Karban is the Karban Pesach, as we said. Rabbi Yeshia says, I look at the fact that the Karban Pesach has its communalism. Yonison says, no, I look at it that it's an individualistic Karban, right? Fourth machlekes that it brings is about Oel HaSaif. It says, you know, the Pasuk says that you are to bring, every time you bring a Karban, you're also to bring some wine libations with it. So the Pasuk says that those wine pourings are in order to make a sweet smelling for Hashem. And that's done when you bring the Karban from the cattle or from the sheep. Why does it have to say from the cattle and from the sheep? Says the Gemara, because it says Oila anytime you bring a Karban, a burnt offering. I would think that also applies when you bring a burnt offering of a bird. Maybe it needs the wine libations. Comes the Torah, which it doesn't. How do we know it doesn't? Comes the Torah, it says no, only if it's from the cattle or the sheep. That's what Rabbi Yeshia says. Rabbi Yonasan says, no, we don't need this pasuk to say Bokar Otzayin to tell us that karbonis of fowl, karbonis of birds, don't require the wine pourings. Why? Because it says only when you bring a zevach, a oif, a bird is not considered zevach. Zevach is considered shechita. Zevach, when you bring something that's shechted. It's shechted in a way of like major shechita. That zevach doesn't include bird. In other words, what do we see here? Rabbi Yoshia obviously was of the opinion that the word zevach could include birds. Rabbi Yoshia, he says, because the word zevach could also mean all kinds of karbanas. Zevach just means anything that's shechted. By the way, the bird in the birds that are offered as a karban in the Beis Hamikdash, they're actually not oif in zevach. Sorry, I didn't point this out. Oif, not that it's not a great kind of shechita. Oif doesn't get shechted. The karbanas that are brought up of birds in the Beis Hamikdash, shechita takes place the front of the neck of the or whatever you're shechting. The birds that were shechted in the Beis Hamikdash were actually not shechted. They weren't cut at the front of the throat. They were what was called melika. They were with the thumb of the kohen. The kohen had a long thumb, a long nail in his thumb, and he would cut the neck of the bird from the back. So Rabbi Yonasan says it's not a zevach. Zevach is shechita from the front. So a oif couldn't be included. A bird couldn't be included. But Rabbi Yosha obviously holds that the word zevach we're going to look at in its generality. It's going to join together all kinds of types of what? All types of things that are shechted. Even a bird, which in its case, it's not actually being shechted from the front. It's the melika process being taken, is being done. And that's why you need a special pasuk to tell you that the oila saif, the karban oila of the bird, doesn't need the wine pourings. Because otherwise I would include it in this generality of zevach. The Yonasan says, no. The word zevach does not include bird. I look at the individuality here. It doesn't include bird. Because it's melika. Bird has melika. It doesn't have what's called zvicha. It's not shechted. It's not melika. That was the fourth. The fifth, about money. We have an aspect of money, a machlokes. When it comes to the fifth, here the topic here is, if somebody, let's say, committed to give a non-kosher animal to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, you can't offer it as a sacrifice, obviously, but the value of the money is now given to the Beis HaMikdash. If the owner comes and says, now I want to take back this giraffe, I dedicated it to the Beis HaMikdash, I want to take it back and give the money for it, I want to redeem it. So he has to, if you're the owner and you're coming to redeem it, giving money and taking back the item, you have to add 20%. You have to add a fifth. But Torah says you have to add a fifth onto it. So Rabbi Yoshia says you have to add a fifth in a way that it and its fifth, the capital and the fifth, turn out to five. In other words, you take 100. Let's say the value is 100. You add 20%. You add a fifth, which means you're going to have to add. You're going to add 25. Why are you going to add 25? Because now, 1/5 of 125, right, is going to be 25. So he says it's called adding a chaymesh from the outside. You're adding a fifth from the outside, that after you've added the fifth, this is now a fifth of the total item. Rabbi Yonason says, no, we add the fifth from the inside. In other words, you figure out how much is a fifth of 100. A fifth of 100 is 20. You add the 20 to the 100. What's the explanation in their argument? The capital and the fifth are two different details. The main value that you have to pay the Beis HaMikdash now to get this item, to turn it into mundane again, the main thing is the capital. Then the Torah says that if it's the owner himself who's coming to redeem it, he has to add a fifth. So that's an addition. However, they do have some commonality. They're both payment for the same deed, for getting that item back from the Hekdesh. Therefore, Rabbi Yoshia, right, we said he looks at joining things together. So he says you got to join these two amounts, and if the Torah says add a fifth, the fifth should be, after you've added it, that amount should turn out to be a fifth. So 25 will be a fifth of 125. However, Rabbi Yoshia says you look at both things separately. The shear is one thing, the capital is one thing, and the additional fifth is another thing. So you look at the capital, you see how much is a fifth, and then you'll add the fifth from the outside. Aside from the inside, you'll add 20. The sixth example of this machlekes is when we talk about time. Because there's a law by the Egla Arufa, if somebody was killed in a city and nobody knows who killed him, then there's a halacha, you bring a calf that was never worked with, and you take it to a gully which was never worked and never nothing was ever planted there. And that symbolizes that the this, just like this earth never yielded anything, never yielded fruit, so too this person who was killed doesn't have the ability to yield fruit, to yield children, and so on. But now let's see. The Torah says it has to be a gully which was never worked with and never planted. Rabbi Yoshi says that means even in the past, going forward, for sure not, even in the past. Rabbi says no, it just means going forward. From now on, you won't be able to do any work or plant this area where this calf is going to be slaughtered as an atonement. The Gemara explains, everybody agrees that you're not allowed to, going forward, you're not allowed to do any work there. It has to be wasteland. Not allowed to plant there or anything. What's the argument? The argument is going back, retroactively. Do you have to look for a place that was never worked, or don't you? So the Rebbe says, this can also be understood in the context of how we're learning, Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonis' Machlekes. Why? Because time has two concepts. You have the details of time, past, present, future. And then you have the collective aspect, the cloud, just the collective concept of time. The whole body of time, so to speak. Past, present, future, it's all part of one continuum. Rabbi Yoshia says we want to look at things together. So now, because time is one continuum, past, present, future, therefore when the Torah gives a stipulation, it should be land that was never worked with and never planted. So that's the way the whole continuum of the time should be with regard to this. It was never worked with, even in the past. Rabbi Yenisa says, no, you look at the details. How each detail, past, present, and future, is a separate thing. And therefore, what we're talking about now is the future. We don't have to talk about the past. We want that this should now not be planted. Rabbi Yoshi says, but time is just one entity. So once we look at it that way, it should never have been planted. Otherwise, it's a violation of this concept, even for the future in a way. Okay, so this has been six arguments. Same vein, Rabbi Yoshi and Rabbi Yenisa, this is unbelievable. But now the Rebbe says, look, what we've spoken many times, that when you find this concept that the same rabbis are arguing according to a particular mindset, according to a particular opinion in their way of thinking, Now what we need to find out is, one second, so why did they have to have this argument in all six cases? Couldn't they just have had the argument in one case? And we'll understand the nuance, we'll understand the essence of their argument. Do we look at things together or do we look at things individual? And then we'll be able to already extrapolate on our own what they would say in the other cases. But therefore what we look to see is that we look to also find why it wouldn't have been enough to just say the argument in one of the places or two of the places. We needed, there could be differences in each of the of the cases that they argue in, where I wouldn't necessarily see this rule to be able to know to apply it always, that this is always the way they argue. I wouldn't be able to extract it from each of the from necessarily from the arguments. Okay, so now that I was going to go and a little bit of hair splitting, and so how it, you can't prove this. Let's jump in. In the last three machlekes, when we spoke about oif, about the whether or not you had to bring the wine pourings for a bird. And we talked about the 20% is from the inside or the outside. Is it right? And we spoke about time. Is it a continuum or not? We could say, besides the fact that since we see something common there, it makes sense to say that they're arguing in the based on the common machlekes that we've identified. But otherwise, we could really learn it differently. We could say that these arguments are not whether are not really hinged on joining many details as a new entity of a community or keeping them separate, but it got to do with other stuff. For example, when we talk about the argument about the sacrifice of the bird, we could say that the argument is really whether the word zevach can be used for bird. And it's nothing to do about the word zevach. If we're looking at all forms of shechita and melika as one, but it's really got to do with whether, this is an interesting machlekes, you may not know, there's an argument whether min ha-Torah, biblically, you actually need to shecht an oif, shecht a bird. Or there's no shechita oif. The halacha is, biblically, we need a shechita of oif. But there's an argument. So you could say this is really part of the same argument. Even though this argument is really only about non-karbonis, however, karbonis, everybody knows you need the melika, the killing of the cutting of the of the bird's neck from the back. However, we do find that the same word, zevach, is a reference to find that this word, zevach, does say about there's a bracket here that's throwing me off. So in other words, it could be that this argument is based on something else, based on whether there's shechita for an eif and atayr. Therefore, that's the argument. Can zevach include eif or not? Nothing to do with are we looking at it, all the forms of shechita as one or looking at them as individual. I wasn't so clear on this. I'm sorry. The next argument that Rebbe says, we could look at it differently, not necessarily based on the thread we've explained, is the concept of the fifth. And the reason for adding the fifth, both for the adding the fifth, we're talking here when the owner is redeeming something he has given to the Beis Hamikdash. What's the reason for it? Let's see what the reason. The Rambam says the reason that an owner, if a non-owner comes, he'll pay, let's say the value is 200, he'll pay 200. Well, let's stick with 100. He'll pay 100. If the owner comes and wants to redeem it, he's going to have to add a fifth, either 125 or 120. Why is that? Says the Rambam, because the Torah got to the depth of a person's subconscious, and he knows that the nature of a person is to try and amass things, to try and get richer, to try and build his wealth. And therefore, subconsciously, when he's coming to redeem something he's given to the Beis HaMikdash, he's going to try subconsciously to do it for less money. So therefore, we tell him he has to add 20% to make sure he's not getting it cheaper, make sure I shouldn't say 20%, he has to add a fifth to make sure he's getting it not for cheaper, so that his subconscious doesn't take him, God forbid, to pay less than it's really worth. So if that's the case, really we could say the machlekas here is a very simple machlekas. How do we evaluate this subconscious of a person, the thought of a person? how much would a person really reduce in his mind the value of the thing he's coming to redeem? And how much, therefore, do we have to oversteer to make sure that he's paying for the actual value? Is it enough a fifth of the capital? In other words, just adding 20 to the 100 in this case? Or is do we know that it? No, that's not enough. We're going to have to actually add even more. We're going to have to add 25, an actual full quarter of the capital, which will make up and become a fifth of the final amount. 25 out of 125. So you could say the machlekes, the argument is not about do we join details or see them individually. Maybe it's just an argument about how far a person's mind would take him to undervalue things because of his innate desire for amassing, for gathering things, for you know, gathering more wealth. When we talked about time, right? We said about, is it about time? Are we joining time or not joining time? About the, does it go retroactively or only in front about the Egla Arufa? We could say it's not an argument whether you join time or you don't join time. You could say that really the argument is about the actual essence of time. As the Ragged Shover Goen said, we have a debate whether time is made up of many, many, many details or it's just one simple continuum. It's one simple entity called time. Maybe that's the machlekes. So, in other words, says the Rebbe, that's why I need, in many other cases, we need to have this argument spelled out, because from those last three, you could say the argument is about something else, not necessarily in that thread. Once we see that this thread continues in many places, so now the simplest way to explain those arguments is also that it's based on the general vantage point of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosheh ben Nosson. Rabbi Yosheh says, look more at the, join the dots and make them one generality. Rabbi Yosheh says, no, look more still at the individual. This, in the first two machlekes as we brought, we could also say they wouldn't necessarily tell us the whole story about the machlekes. Why? Because when we're talking about somebody who's cursing his father and mother, the argument is about the explanation of the style of the pasuk. When the Torah writes two things together without writing together, but it mentions two things and doesn't say together, doesn't mean only both of them together, or does it mean each one individually? And that you wouldn't know from the other arguments, because we're arguing here about the language of the Torah. It's an language. It's an argument about style of the Torah writing, right? So maybe it's not about. You could learn that it's not necessarily about the mode of thinking, Rabbi Yosheh and Rabbi Yonasan, the way we've outlined it. Another thing is, here the argument is when the Torah specifies in one pasuk two totally separate things. That's not like capital and a fifth, which they're both part of one thing. When the Torah says two totally separate things, father and mother, do you join them to be as one? So we could say that Rabbi Yosheh holds that maybe in other cases you do join. But by father and mother you don't join because they're separate entities. But that wouldn't tell us, let's say, what we would say regarding a fifth. Maybe regarding a fifth he would say, well, the fifth and the capital, they're part of one entity. Right? In other words, yeah, okay. By the city, the idolatrous city, their argument is about a word in the Torah. It says in the Torah the word ear, city. What does it mean? So Lucharim, we could say this argument seems to be the same argument about oif, about bird. There also it's about what does zevach mean. So why do you need to have the machlekes about ear and about zevach? Now that we've said that zevach, they have this machlekes, and it's, I'm not sure, I'm a little bit lost, sorry. So, but you can, we can carry on. So beyond, in addition to what we've said before, that with the word zevach, you could say it's not an argument about the generality of zevach, but it's really hinged on the argument, does oif need shchita min ha-teira? We could also say that by ir ha-nidachas, by an idolatrous city, there's a chidush and a chiluk in the din about the how we look at a community, at a tzibur in itself, between 10, 100, and majority of a shevet. And that's why we would think that in this place, maybe Rabbi Yosheh and Rabbi Yonasan wouldn't, we would think that in this case Rabbi Yoshia may agree to Rabbi Yonasan that more than 100 is indeed a city, because a ear is also a city. On the other hand, maybe Rabbi Yonasan, in this case, we made it to Rabbi Yoshia. Maybe he would say that for some things, 10 is considered no longer individuals. So that's why they have to have the argument there also. We wouldn't know it from the general rule that we've established, the pattern that we've established. I just want to tell you, if you're feeling a little lost, hang on, because we're about to get back to the main, to the first topic about Korban Pesach, and it's going to become very understandable. But in the meantime, the Rebbe is bringing another aspect. This is Ois Ches. I am going to skip it for at this moment. I'm sorry. No, I'm not going to skip it. I'm going to go back. Okay. Ois Ches. Ois 8. This that Rabbi Yeshia holds by Mekalel. When we talk about the prohibition of cursing mother and father, that Rabbi Yeshia says you join both, and I need a pasuk to tell me that if one curses each one individually, one also is liable. Otherwise, I would say the Torah requires them both. So this is not just when both details are from the same type, father and mother, even when they're totally different types. This we learn from a different machlekas. That brings a seventh machlekas, where we see a similar concept. There's a machlekas like this. This is a machlekas about the blood of the carbon. We mix, there's an argument, do we mix the blood of the different corners of the Mizbeach, or do we not mix the blood of the different corners of the Mizbeach? What does that mean? It says, in the certain karbanis you take from the blood of the ox and from the blood of the goat. And this tells us that they should be mixed with each other. And then they're sprinkled on the corners of the Mizbeach. This is what Rabbi Yoshia says. Rabbi Yonasan says, you sprinkle from this one on its own and from this one on its own. Now let's understand here. Again, Machlekes, Rabbi Yonasan. Rabbi Yoshia says, you mix them and you sprinkle them. Rabbi Yonasan says, no, you got to keep the blood of the bull and the blood of the goat separate. What's going on here? This is Yom Kippur sacrifices. The bull of the Kohen Gadol of Yom Kippur is an individual carbon. The blood of the sire of the goat, this is for the people. This is a carbon tzibur. It's a collective carbon. Nonetheless, Rabbi Yeshia says, we mix them together and the bloods are sprinkled together on the corners of the Mizbeach. A greater chiddush about mixing for the corners. And this is greater than the chiddush that the mother and father are brought together to be as one unit, if not for the pasuk that says that even if you curse them individually, because they're at least part of one cohesive unit of those that gave birth to the child. Here it's a carbon tzibur and a carbon yochanan. Rabbi Yoshi says, we bring them together. Another chiddush is that Rabbi Yoshi has said, if not for a special teaching, that if you curse each one individually, you're also chayiv. I would think that you're only chayiv if you curse them together at the same time. It wouldn't mean, though, that they had to be cursed in the same speech. It would still mean, even if they were cursed at the same time, it means even one after the other. And the chiddush of the pasuk is that even for a mother or father alone, is also chayiv. In other words, the connection here means mother and father, but it could mean, even when you connect mother and father, it could be one after the other. It could be However, when we talk about mixing the blood for sprinkling on the corners of the Mizbeach, everybody holds it has to be, both of them have to eventually come on the corners of the Mizbeach. The question is, do you mix them or do you sprinkle each one individually? And that's why there's a chiddush in the opinion of Rabbi Yoshia that it's not good enough to do one after the other. You actually mix them together and do them on the corners. However, there's also a chiddush in the shita of the Bienison, because when we say you mix and put it on the corners of the Mizbeach, so we understand why he keeps them separate. The soil is a communal carbon, and that's why there's a svara to say that maybe we should, since it's a communal carbon, maybe we should just mix the bloods together. Because actually the individual is also part of the community. So maybe join the bloods together, the Kohen Gadol's carbon and the communal carbon. However, which is not the case, by Mekalil, by cursing, we're there, we say that both father and mother are individuals. I'm going to jump, Tess. I'm sorry for that. I'm going to go to you. And here we're going to get back into more firm territory for me, at least. The chiddush about Korban Pesach Yud. I'm jumping to Eis Yud. The chiddush that is there in the argument about Pesach is, and therefore we couldn't have learned this from the other arguments, because basically all these arguments of Yeshua and Yenison have given us a pattern. So why do they have to argue about Korban Pesach? Wouldn't we know the pattern? That what they would say, obviously, no. As we've said earlier at great length, according to all opinions, Korban Pesach has both aspects to it, both the communal and the individual. And therefore, we could have said that in the case where Rabbi Yoshua, that in this case, because the Pesach definitely has both, that if I may say that Rabbi Yoshua would agree to Rabbi Yonason. That here Rabbi Yoshua would say, yeah, it's individual. On the other hand, maybe from Fakert, maybe I would say, because there's definitely an individual, definitely a communal aspect here, maybe Rabbi Yonason will agree to Rabbi Yoshua that here it's, we don't look at the individualistic aspect. The fact that Korban Pesach has both aspects will also be able to understand better when we look at the concept of a tzibur. We could explain the concept of a community in two ways. One, we could say that the community, the individuals lose their identity, and there becomes a new entity called a metzios of a tzibur, an entity of a community. Just like there's an entity of an individual, now there's a new entity called a community. The individual no longer exists. Or we could say that the entity of a community doesn't mean a new, totally new reality of a group called a community, but it still means it's a gathering together of many individuals. As we say, when we say that you should, when there's many people, b'rei v'am, when there's a great amount of people, the glory of the king is greater. What does it mean there? It doesn't mean that they become one entity. Well, if they become one entity, then you don't have a multitudinous of people. When you say Rav Am, when they have a lot of people, it adds to the glory of the king, it means you're taking into account each and every one of the individuals. So, this is also when we talk about the concept of Tzibur by Pesach, about Pesach. It's not a carbon Tzibur where everybody becomes one entity, but it's the kind of carbon where everybody maintains their identity. At least three separate groups. And we could say, Mederech Efshar, says Rebbe, we could say possibly that the inner reason why Korban Pesach has these two things of Yochid and Tzibur, communal and individual, is because Pesach is the time of the birth of Am Yisrael. And therefore, we have in Korban Pesach these two opposing concepts. On the one hand, because Bnei Yisrael, Am Yisrael has this in itself. On the one hand, all Yidden are united as one individual, as one entity of a tzibur, of a community, one total body of people. On the other hand, every Jew is like a full world, a complete world. So now we can understand why the concept of tzibur in relationship to Korban Pesach became in the Midbar, the first Korban Pesach they brought. even though the Jewish people were born at Exodus, we're going out of Egypt, that's the birth of Jewish people, because also by Yidden, the preparation to becoming a tzibur, one entity, really started only after they left Egypt, by Matan Torah. What does it say about Matan Torah? When they camped opposite the mountain, ki'ishachad, like one person. Nonetheless, even in Egypt, there was a communal aspect of the Korban Pesach. More than that, they brought a Korban Pesach. More than that, we learn many of the laws of Pesach for all generations from the Korban Pesach that they brought in Egypt. In other words, the Korban Pesach they brought in Egypt is the head and is the basis for all the Korban Pesachs they brought later. Because this, that Am Yisrael, later by Matan Torah became an entity of a tzibur, it's in a way that the Metzius, the actual existence and prominence of every individual, which that was the emphasis of Korban Pesach in Egypt, it doesn't get lost. It also maintains its identity afterwards. And that's why, even in Pesach Mitzrayim, there was a little bit of an aspect of a communal aspect, as what does it say in the Medrash? That all the Bnei Yisrael got a whiff of the Korban Pesach of Moshe. They all came, they wanted to eat from the Korban Pesach of Moshe. And they all did. So they all ate from one Korban Pesach. It was a communal Korban. At least, because this is going to be the basis of Korban Pesach forever, and Korban Pesach has a communal aspect, at least it had to have something of a communal aspect to it, at least in the Korban of the leader of the generation, the Nasi Adar. So there was a concept of community there. This point that the Bnei Yisrael become one entity like a community, and yet it doesn't cancel out the individuals, we find even in Korban HaSiva, we find it even in literal communal Korbanis. What do we find? We find that even though it's bought from the money of the community, and anybody who's giving money to the community, to have shekels and so on, has to give it, whatever you donate to the community, you have to give it to the Beis HaMikdash. You have to give it with the intention that's totally going over to the community. It's no longer has any aspect of individual money. Nonetheless, the individuals aren't totally lost. The part of every individual is there in every communal korban. As we know that Moshe Rabbeinu davened to Hashem in the argument against Korach, don't turn to their meal offering. In other words, I know that they also have a part in the communal korbanos. Every Jew has a little part in the communal korbanos. Don't turn to their little part. In other words, the individual is not totally lost, even in the communal korban. More than that, there's a law that if an individual member of the community is being weighed against the entire community, for example, somebody, an enemy, is saying either give one or everybody's going to get killed, you don't give up one for everyone in order to save everybody. As the Rambam says, the Goyim says, give us one of you guys, and we'll kill that one guy. If not, we'll kill all. You let them all be killed. You can't give one person over to say, even though here's a community, here's just one. The individual doesn't get lost. The community doesn't cause the individual to lose his identity and be a non-entity. Yud Gimel. Same way it is regarding to its tzibur, regarding to the community. The generality of the Jewish people, so it is also about the individual. In each individual, we expect from him two things, two separate feelings. Like Hillel says in the Pirkei Avos, if I am not for me, who will be for me? Individuality. And if I am only for myself, what am I? In other words, you have to be an individual, anili. At the same time, you have to be a part of the community. And if you're not part of the community, you're nothing. According to this, we can understand that these both aspects are expressed in Korban Pesach. And perhaps, and in this way, we can explain the saying of Hillel in a way of tzachos, in a way of a light or a remez. Tzachos is not light. Tzachos is in a more. It's not a joke. Tzachos is in a. I don't know how to adequately translate it, but in not such a serious vein, more light vein. We could say that, even though in the times of, we could explain it, that this relates to the first parak of Pirkei Avos, which is said right after Pesach. Even though in the time of Hillel, there was no minig to say Pirkei Avos yet. But since we have the minig now, the first week after Pesach, we start saying Pirkei Avos, and that minig and the Torah is eternal, so we can connect the first parak of Pirkei Avos with something we've learned about Pesach and with what Hillel is saying here. In other words, as we explained in the beginning, there was an argument. B'nei B'seira, children of the Nasi, they said, no, we don't bring the carbon Pesach on Shabbos. Hillel said, you do. It's a communal carbon. There's aspects of it being a communal carbon. As we said earlier, so now that's what Hillel is telling us. Right after Pesach, after Hillel became a Nasi, because he had taught that the carbon, he remembered this law, that the carbon Pesach is brought on Shabbos because there's something of community to it, he tells us a teaching in Pirkei Avos the following. If I am not for myself, who's for me? In other words, the carbon Pesach also has individuality, yochid. You have to bring it from your own money, from individual money. It's only for the group that has become appointed on it, right? Taking reservations for it. On the other hand, Shani la'atzmi, if I'm only for myself, what am I? You also need to be part of the community. Like the carbon Pesach, like Hillel talked about the Pesach. Excuse me. Because if it would only be for me, if it only be something individual, it wouldn't push off Shabbos. And then, ma'ani, what would I be, says Hillel? I wouldn't be the Nasi. If not for the communal aspect, what would be with me? And here's the tzachos. I wouldn't be a Nasi. I became a Nasi because I brought in that the Karban Pesach has a communal aspect and it's brought on Shabbos. And everyone remembered, yeah, that's true. And I was made Nasi. So you could ask, even if the Karban Pesach has an aspect of Tzibur, but still and all, why do we bring it? We bring it on Shabbos because it has a fixed time. That's the continuation of Hillel saying, Im lo ya'achshav emes, if not now, when? In other words, the Korban Pesach has an aspect where it has to be done now, otherwise it can't be done. And that's why it's brought on Shabbos, because of the community aspect which needs to be done right now. Yud Dalet, now that it brings home a personal note here. In Avedis Hashem. Same way it is about every Jew for himself. He needs to be an individual and a part of the community. It's also, but again, how he treats others. Loving others is himself. It's known that when we talk about Avos Yisrael, to any Jew that may be, so from the fact that all of Yisrael is like one man, like one person, like one person friends, so the Alter Rebbe explains, we're like one person made up, comprised of various limbs. So there's two ways of learning this, two explanations. One is that every Yid is a portion of Klal Yisrael. And as we know, the Medrash says, if the Jewish people would have been missing even one person of the 600,000 that were there, they're giving the Torah wouldn't have been given, the Shekhinah wouldn't have been revealed to them. And we know that there's a saying that any fast, any prayer that takes place on a fast day that doesn't have it from the sinners of Israel included there is not a proper fast, it's not a proper prayer. Which tells us, but that's not because of the individual mile of virtue advantage of the individual. But it's because he comprises one of the members of the general community. That's one aspect. That every individual complements the whole because he's part of the whole. Second aspect is each one has their individualistic advantage and virtue. And that virtue completes the community. As the Alter Rebbe says, that there's a benefit, there's an advantage of the head, of the feet over the head. That because of this advantage, in some ways, I mean, the feet can take you where the head can't go. That's why in some ways, feet are higher than head. However, although we understand that there's an individual advantage and virtue to the individual, just like feet have a virtue over head, but really we understand we're not looking at that individual virtue as being important. We're looking that we need the entirety of the gamut of the klal, so we need all aspects, feet and head and so on. But the Alter Rebbe says, though, that the concept of Avos Yisrael, he says it's not enough to just know that we're all part of one entity and one father, and that's why we're like brothers. He says also, he introduces the concept by saying a third concept. He says, v'hanefesh v'aruach, that the soul and the spirit, who knows their individual greatness and virtue in their source in Hashem. In other words, you have to love another Jew because of his greatness, because of his advantage as an individual in the detail of his greatness. Not just because it complements and makes up the communal whole. And also the love, which we say is like, love your fellow like yourself. In other words, view others like they're limbs, differing limbs in the same body. Even though each of those limbs needs to be an individual limb, but they're all part of the same body. And that's why even when you're hearing, even in the place where you distinguish only the individual aspect of that limb, not how that limb is a detail in the completion of the body, you join yourself together with all the other limbs as one body. The nuance here is like this. In other words, there's the aspect where, yes, a body needs all kinds of limbs, but I'm not really thinking about the virtue of the foot, so to speak. Then there's another aspect where we're looking at the individual virtue of each and every one. And kamecha, love your fellows yourself, see their greatness as being distinct from you and a different kind of limb than you, a part of one body. And through this, being occupied in after echa kamecha, from one Jew to the other, it's Hashem. Hashem is called also our friend, Re'echa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem will show His love to every Yid. And He's going to redeem us from the galus. In two ways also. One way is, as the Navi says, Hashem will pick out each and every individual Jew in an individualistic way. As Hashem, as Rashi points out, that Hashem is going to take us, holding by the hands, literally each individual. And also it says that Hashem will take Kohol God Yishuvahenu, the entire community, as a big community will go back. Both the individual and the tzibur. Okay, all the best.